Hey, everybody. Welcome to our very first death address, which is our fun.
It was a TH at the end of first.
You didn't say ST.
Yeah, you did.
You said,
"Our very first."
Oh, I messed up already.
Everyone messed up for you. That's so funny.
I didn't hear it.
It's our first death address.
Okay, well, we're using that.
Whatever you say, Colin Firth.
Time to learn, time to laugh. It's the death address.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to our very first ever death address, which is where we talk about deaths throughout time, and they can be interesting, they can be ironic. Whatever we find, we'll chat about, and yeah, we're gonna get started with our very first one ever on Attila the Hun. So yeah, do you guys know much about Attila before I start talking about him?
He was a Hun.
Yeah, I was gonna say he was the leader.
I thought you were talking about like a honey bun.
I think some of the Chinese soldiers got down to business to defeat him.
Yep.
When you say down to business, like with honey buns.
And I can tell you that he is definitely not to be confused with Genghis Khan.
I made that mistake just a second
ago.
Yeah, we made...
Yeah. Okay.
Well,
basically what I'll do is I'm going to give you kind of a brief synopsis of who he was, and then we're going to dig into his death, essentially. What led up to it, what happened because of it, and some of his weird personality quirks and traits along the way. So, yeah, feel free to interject as we go.
This will be fun.
Okay. Yes. If I can talk. Okay. So basically, I started my research just looking at who he was, just to give you guys a little bit of a background. Basically, you guys are right. He was this big warrior, emperor person, and he did a lot of decimating cities with his armies, bringing together various tribes to take over mainly Rome and the Roman Empire. But he did a lot more than that. Well, I mean, that was his main stuff. But yeah, he had some other stuff going on in his life. He ruled the Hunnite or the Hun Empire, and he was brought into that actually with his brother. It wasn't just him originally. And when he was born, he was actually born into a royal family, and he was taught a lot of his really good leadership qualities, his fighting ability, all of that when he was really young. So he was basically born to be a commander. A lot of it was actually brought to him. He was born in what's now like present day Hungary, but was part of the Roman Empire at the time. So he technically was a Roman in that essence, but he was known a lot, like I said, for his troops that basically came in and destroyed entire cities, claimed them for their own. And basically in a 10-year period, he brought together a group of nomadic tribesmen and turned them into an empire. So he's a pretty cool dude. Lots of stuff going on there. But just to set the stage for you, this was back in 400 to 460-ish CE or 80 for some people. So it was a long, long time ago.
That's like medieval times, right?
Not quite. More like a Roman Empire.
Roman Empire.
Yeah, think of like Alexander the Great kind of time frame.
I was trying to throw you off.
Yeah.
So there's no dinosaurs?
Alexander the Great was Greek, right?
I didn't research that.
Alexander the Great was not Greek.
No, he wasn't. But he did ride a dinosaur.
No.
Yeah, sure.
Wait, Alexander the Great.
All right, let's move forward.
Macedonian. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, no, I was going to say he wasn't Roman.
King of the ancient Greek kingdom, Macedon. So he was Greek.
Right? Yeah.
That's a dinosaur.
That's not Macedon. All right, so dinosaurs aside, the Hun Empire actually stretched from Central Asia all the way through modern-day France. It was a huge empire, and a lot of the victories were due to his ruthlessness. But also, he actually got a lot of this land due to treaties. People were basically so afraid that he was going to kill them that they would pay him a protection fee for him to not attack them.
I know about this from my Italian ancestors.
I was going to say, this is where the mafia got it from.
That's exactly what I was going to say. It was like the mafia started back in the dinosaurian age.
Great dinosaur.
So this was pre-dinosaur, you know, not quite there yet. But
pre-dinosaur? Before dinosaur time?
Before he got a dinosaur.
Oh, before he got a dinosaur.
Yeah. Yep. Gotcha. So he was a really, really good warrior, but he was also good at basically talking with all of these upper senators in the Roman Empire and basically staying on the same level as actual emperors and rulers of the time. Mm-hmm. So he wasn't just a badass warrior. He actually knew how to lead as well. But some of these treaties, one of the really funny ones was he had a treaty in place when he was ruling with his brother. They took over for one of his uncles, who was the king of the Huns at the time. And when he passed away, his brother and him came into the ruling role. And one of the treaties that was in place was they were paid 700 gold pieces or gold, whatever the measurement was at the time, I think it was pounds, a year for protection. Well, they decided along the way that either that wasn't enough or they thought that the Romans had broken a treaty of some kind. And when the Romans were out trying to conquer another part of the country or another another country altogether, they're like, you know what? They're gone. Let's just go attack them until the point that they decide they want to pay us more. So as the soldiers of the Eastern Roman Empire were gone, they went into the city and started killing all the citizens until finally the ruler was like, okay, if you leave us alone, we'll pay you 2,100 gold pieces or pounds a year instead. So
tactics.
Yeah, they pretty crafty.
That is one hell of a bamboozle right there.
Yeah, pretty crafty, pretty cunning.
Just be like, dear boss, I will destroy your office unless you pay me more money.
Right?
Yep.
I don't know if that tactic works to this day.
I don't know if it would work today or not, but it worked for him. He was that scary. Yeah. And one of the funny things I found was he was known for his notoriously fierce gaze. And they follow that up by saying that he frequently rolled his eyes as if he was enjoying the terror that he inspired. So he just thought he was so scary and enjoyed it so much that he would roll his eyes when people got scared of him.
So not
sounds only like he was tired of everybody's shit.
Not only did he start the mafia, but he also invented the like angry dad gaze when the children
do. Oh god, yeah, I have him to thank.
You just don't say a word, you stare at him and they're like,
I'm not mad, I'm just disappointed.
Yep.
I'm just disappointed.
No, and he
they're
also
like, you've killed 500 people and you rolled your eyes at me. 2,100 a year.
2,100 a year.
But he also would supposedly scare people by claiming that he owned the actual sword of Mars, the Roman god of war. So he said he had it. And I think, you know, because he was near the Roman Empire, you know, they might have believed that he did. And actually, that might be how he got some of his followers into.
I would have dared somebody to tell him that he did not have that. Right?
That's also like when you're that notorious at that point, like you can kind of get away with whatever you want. And like people are scared of your gaze. They're going to be terrified of whatever you tell them.
Wait, how do we know he was lying? I believe him.
Yeah, that's the thing. He had the numbers to back it up.
Hey, if I saw the guy this day, I probably wouldn't question him. I'd be like, dude, you do.
Yep.
I mean, as long as you do it with confidence, you can do anything.
That still holds true to this day.
Yep. So now one of the kind of quirky things about him I found was even though he raided and pillaged and blackmailed half of the Roman Empire out of all their money, he actually lived really simply. He never used any of the gold or the silver that he took. Instead, when he was at banquets, he would have all of his people, all of his soldiers, all of his diplomats at his meals served on silver platters and gold goblets and the most delicious foods. And then he would just have a wooden plate with like a slab of meat on it. So he never really cared for the finer things. And he never.
So he's also Robin Hood.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, no. He cared for the finer things. He just wanted his enemies to think he was hard as fuck.
Yeah, you know.
I was thinking he was just sleeping on all the gold and silver like a dragon.
So am I the only one that missed growing up and realizing that everything in our, like, entertainment was based off of Attila the Hun's life?
Seriously. I mean, it's got to start somewhere.
He was Smaug.
He was also the desolation of Smaug.
But, and I really, the only thing, he never really dressed in fine garbs or anything like that, but he did stay clean. That was his big thing. He made sure that he was clean at all times, never had dirty feet, you know, so he was a clean, humble barbarian warrior.
Couldn't have that Rona running through the camps, man.
Yeah. Yep. Same would go when he would ride into battle. You know, he would just have unadorned armor on. His horse wouldn't have anything on him. He would just carry, you know, supposedly the Sword of Mars.
Dude, that's just...
I think that's more strategy, so he didn't
stand
out.
That is the biggest flex I've ever seen. He's like, I don't even need cool armor. My horse doesn't even need armor, bro. You're still going to just get your ass kicked.
Oh, yep. Did I mention that I have the Sword of Mars?
Yes.
Did you see that? I'm going to roll my eyes at you until you acknowledge
it. I'm going to roll my eyes at you now.
He's cheating.
Yep. Now, his other kind of fun little thing. So he was humble and modest when it came to all of his plundered goods, but he was really into prophecy. So he wasn't really religious in any way, but he definitely believed in prophecies, especially one that he was told that his empire would eventually fall. Now, I don't know if that means he just was kind of ahead of the times and kind of knew the pattern of history, but he actually would get so depressed at banquets that he would just kind of like sit by himself and be depressed because he knew that it would eventually end and that his race would fall.
Aww. I feel like that's the easy way out of a prophecy. It's like, this will end eventually. Like, well, no shit.
Yep. But,
well, I guess I'm just going to have to rate and beat the shit out of everybody until my dynasty.
But, like, what if he met Mars and Mars was like, here, homie, take my sword, do what you got to do, but you only got this amount of time and it's going to end.
Well, he did believe that his youngest son would be the one to bring his empire back to glory. Never happened, but he kind of, like, I don't know if it's, like, favoring the youngest or whatever kind of thing. But, yeah, he
needless to say, his son was a giant disappointment.
Yeah.
All of them were.
He's not mad. He's just disappointed. Yeah.
I wasn't mad at them, but I was disappointed in every single one of them.
Yeah, we'll get to how big of disappointments they were at the end of this.
Perfect. Let's continue.
So pretty much that's who he was. Like I said, he grew up learning archery, swords. He even learned how to lasso. He learned how to...
Oh, you're a freaking Wonder Woman?
That's what I'm about to say.
Yep. He even learned at a young age how to conduct siege warfare, which seemed to work really, really well for him. So yeah, he was super educated, knew how to, you know, walk around on a battlefield without dying. You know, that's pretty important.
I mean, he had the Sword of Mars, though.
Right? And isn't Ares in Wonder Woman? So it's like a version of Wonder Woman, but Attila the Hunter Woman.
Go ahead, Ethan.
Oh, I was just saying, it's so weird hearing Mars instead of Ares.
Oh, yeah.
Just because the Greek gods are the more popular ones usually used.
The Romans just ripped off the Greeks. It wasn't even that they were more popular. They were just like, oh, let's just change the names.
Ray, what did you say?
Oh, I was just saying that if you tried to engage this man in one-on-one combat, you're going up against a dude with the Sword of Mars and an eye roll to rival that of pretty much any woman today.
Yep. Well, and the other thing is, so even if it wasn't...
It's 2021, men too.
Yeah.
Men too, indeed.
Yeah, and there is something that said too, that even if it wasn't actually Mars who he got his sword from, they were saying that he found this really well-crafted sword that was created by a shepherd as a sign. He took that as a sign that he had a right to wage war because he believed in prophecy and that kind of stuff. So... it may have turned into that story, but either way, he was like, I got this cool sword now, so I'm going to do something.
You guys can just
suffer Jesus.
Something about Jesus.
I asked if the shepherd was Jesus.
Oh.
I
mean, every prophecy comes with a shepherd.
He wasn't religious, and I'm pretty sure if he would have found Jesus at some point, then he would be at least a little bit religious. So I'm going to go with it wasn't Jesus.
I was iffy on just the whole prophecy thing, but as soon as she said shepherd, now I'm all in on the prophecy.
I mean, the gods disguise themselves as low-level
people.
That's true.
Boom. Hence...
So it would make sense that he would believe it as a prophecy that some random shepherd giving him this nice sword would be a god.
Called it.
Wait, Mars, so it was Jesus?
Mars, Zeus, Ares, whatever you even want to call him at this point, you know?
Yeah, he got a cool sword.
Shepherd, sword. Yeah. It's going to last you this long. Do what you got to do.
Commander Shepherd.
So anyways, moving beyond the sword.
Oh yeah, sorry.
We'll continue in his journey
you
here.
You can't talk about swords here.
At that point, he had basically joined up as co-ruler with his brother. It's either Bleda or Bleda. I don't know. I don't know how to pronounce it.
Where?
So
was it what you're looking?
It's Bleda. Bleda? Bleda.
Yeah, you know.
I don't know.
Your guess is as good.
Yeah.
Yeah, something. I don't know.
They took over the Hun Empire, went on, you know, got more money out of people, were taking over territories, and at that point, either something happened, there was a brotherly fallout, or Attila just decided that he didn't want to rule with anybody else and murdered his brother. So I don't know if there's anything that says if he actually did it or if he had somebody do it for him, but regardless, his brother was assassinated.
So Ethan, we're brothers. If we were ruling a kingdom together, would it come to this and you would murder me to be the ruler?
It would be up to you because I'm the older one, so I would already have control.
Oh, this is true. But
this is a good
time out.
That
could
be a classic Ethan excuse right there.
Yeah, that is an Ethan excuse, but it still could be up to you because the way you treat me might make me want to kill you or not.
You know, I mean.
But that was no, that's bullshit. The question was co-ruling. We were co-ruling, so you were not.
I didn't hear you say co-ruling.
That was the whole point of this story.
Ethan's like, oh, if we're co-ruling, Dakota's definitely got to go.
Yeah, exactly. Do we get an empire the size of like Rhode Island or like Texas?
Does it matter?
Yes.
All right. So the answer is yes. He would clearly kill me. Let's continue.
I mean, this was a pretty big empire at this point.
Wait to kill each other until we have video recording.
Typical game.
There you go.
Keep enabled, man. Starting all over.
So, anyways, bleed up. Bleda has died. Attila is
Bleda,
going on.
Bleda.
He got Bleda.
He basically took over and he decided, you know what? I'm not done with all this. I have all the power now. I have this awesome sword. I'm going to go for it. So he keeps going after the Eastern Roman Empire, not Easter.
That bunny is not getting away.
Jesus was involved somehow. I knew it.
It all comes back full circle.
Attila the Hun did not invent Easter. All right, we didn't say that.
So
co-invented before he killed the co-ruler.
So he pretty much gets them into this treaty, is gathering the 2,100 gold pounds per year just for himself now. His brother is not involved, but you know, he doesn't do anything with it. He just, like you said, kind of like a dragon. He just sits on it.
Smiley.
And basically turns his attention towards the West and specifically towards France. The biggest campaign that he does after this is the invasion of Gaul, with G-A-U-L.
The Gaul of him.
Gaul. Again, I'm not doing this pronunciation very well.
No, Gaul's right.
But he's looking towards France, and he does have a little bit of friendly terms with some of the other Roman generals, especially the ones that were on the Eastern Empire side. But there was a specific Roman general, Aetius, and he was the quote-unquote ruler of the West at the time. And he and, Attila and Aetius, had decided to kind of team up together. Aetius, there you go. That's probably what it is.
Is that what it is?
That makes no sense.
And we're going to kind of combine and take over the western area of what is now Europe, Italy, kind of that area in there near France. And yeah, until it was going to head that way and they were going to kind of get together and take over as much land as they could. Well, on the way, so I haven't mentioned yet that Attila was a polygamist. He had several wives at the time. That was just something he kind of collected wives, essentially.
He liked somebody. From the rest of what you call
I'm what you like to call a collector of wives.
Do you need one? I have another one in the shed.
I have another one. Need this one. Her name is Tuesday.
Have you seen my sword? It's from Mars.
It's from Mars. Sorry, it's from Mars, the god, or the planet, whichever one you prefer.
Either one.
Now, I will say they don't have an actual number of the amount of wives he had. They assume some of them were prisoners of war or daughters of emperors.
We'll just assume he was Will Chamberlain, and it's like an amount.
He had an amount. I literally was going to say we can say that his book is probably twice the size of Will Chamberlain's.
Jesus, you got to get with it here.
So, anyways, he has a lot of wives. Yep, he's got the wife thing going on. He's still out looking. He's always on the hunt for another wife. But as he's moving towards France, the Western emperor at the time, Valentinian III, had a sister. And as he's moving towards France, all of a sudden he gets a ring sent to him from Honoria. Again, I'm terrible with the names. I'm so sorry.
Let's not say Honoria. Honoria.
I'm going to say Honoria.
Honoria. We should avoid the Honoria. If the actual pronunciation is Honoria, we're sorry. 2 times.
But anyways, she's the emperor's sister, this Western emperor. And all of a sudden, Attila receives a ring from her and a note asking him to rescue her from a marriage arranged by her brother. So, you know, Attila's not thinking, oh, yeah, I can go, you know, maybe form a bond with her, whatever. His immediate thoughts is, oh, she's proposing to me. So he sends...
This could be another one to my collection.
Yep. He immediately puts a claim out for her, says, you know what? She's going to be my wife. And he also demands half of the Western Empire as her dowry. So not only is he like, oh, yeah, I got your ring, you are now my wife, but I'm going to take half of your empire as dowry. So,
I mean, she sounds like she's worth it just for
that. So, you find out that's not what she was asking. Oh. She wasn't asking that at all. Oh. So he sends back this note saying, okay, yeah, I'll marry you and you have to give me half your empire. The actual emperor, Valentinian III, is like, no, we're not going to do that. She's actually going to go ahead and marry this other dude that we already promised her to. Well, this really pisses Attila off. And he
goes and gives everybody honoria.
He couldn't add to his collection of Pokemon cards.
Now, I will say at first, her brother, Valentinian, was like, you know what? I'm pissed off that she even sent this note. He, at one point, was like, you know what? Screw her. We're just going to give her to Attila just so he'll leave us alone.
Fair.
But he decided, probably not a good idea to give up half my empire for my sister. So he, married her off to a boring Roman aristocrat dude. But like I said, it makes Attila really angry. So he decides to wage both of his next military campaigns in her honor. So he goes on a killing spree, essentially, and starts two other battles in her name, claiming that he never, you know, he was cheated out of love.
I don't think there's another choice. He did the right thing.
Yeah, and absolutely. I would like to say, I don't think there's ever any record that he ever met her. She only sent a ring to him.
Not only everything else he already invented, he also invented blind dates.
That was the first Tinder.
That was the first Tinder hookup.
Yep. So she's
mine now.
Yeah. So rather than, you know, say, oh, maybe that's not what she was saying, he was like, nope, that's exactly what she said. She wants to marry me. We're going to be co-rulers of the Western Empire.
Did you see the video I showed you? I did, but I'm still going with that. She wants to marry me.
I'm pretty sure. Yeah. that means she wants to marry me. No, bro, she definitely doesn't want to marry you. Yep, I knew it. She wants
just
to marry me.
She's just playing hard to get. It's fine.
Attila was a closer, man. He,
yep.
He was a closer.
He knew what he wanted, and he went after it.
Yep. So after being spurred by the Western Roman Empire, or emperor, and Honoria, he threatened to kick the empire or the emperor out of his own palace and march to kick France, him right in the nuts. Which was
I'm Attila the Hun, and you're on. You've been kicked in the nuts.
But yeah, he's like, yep, okay, well, because you didn't let me marry her and you married her off to someone else, I'm going to kick you out of your own palace and basically take all your land. So the two armies clashed in what is now known as northeastern France. It's the Battle of Chalons. And it was just a big battle, essentially, between the Huns and the Western Roman Empire. And it was pretty bad. There was a lot of death. Attila's plan was basically to attack the weakest part and just charge through the battle lines until they got to the center of the Western Emperor's army. Emperor's army. And just kill anybody they saw. In the end, though, the Roman line ended up holding, and Attila was so upset that he didn't win, that it kind of came to a stalemate, that he created a funeral pyre and threatened to burn himself. So yeah, he got real upset and was like, you know what? If I can't win the war, I don't want to ever be defeated. So he built a funeral pyre and tried to burn himself.
That's what he did to like the Roman fighting.
Yeah. So
the Romans are there like, we're trying to kill you. And he's like, if I don't win, I'm going to burn myself. And they're like,
no.
Oh, no.
Don't shoot myself in the head right now.
This was to his own troops.
Okay, that makes a lot more sense. I'm like sitting there as a Roman like warrior, like, should we stop him?
No. So, it doesn't seem right.
We should. That's not good.
Yeah, he was trying
trying
to show his masculinity, and basically it was to prove that he was like, I'd rather die than be defeated in battle, was kind of his whole thing.
I don't know about that. That seems like a little bit of a whiny move. Like, yeah. I'll do it. I'll just kill myself, guys.
Yep.
You don't fight harder.
So yeah, it was more his reputation. He didn't want to see his reputation die. But in the end,
was he a Gemini?
Hey, I'm a Gemini, and he might be.
I know.
So.
I know these.
Yep. Anyways, in the end, he ended up pulling back and going into Central Europe. And then after that, at some point, he did end up forcing Valentinian III to flee to Rome by marching into northern Italy. And he destroyed a bunch of territories in there. And it's questionable whether he actually took Rome or not. I found a bunch of different sources that said he did, a bunch that said he didn't. But eventually he did get a little bit of revenge on Valentinian by making him flee. So
basically on his way back, he acted like a child and knocked all of his Legos and knife things down as he left.
Yeah. Yep.
I'm taking him with me. Taking my ball and I'm going home.
I don't even
home.
Need this stupid sword from Mars anymore.
Yeah. And I will say at this point, this is around like 452 AD ish. So he's around 45 years old, 40 to 50, somewhere in there. So he's a very well established adult.
A well established man, baby.
Anyway, so we're up to 452. He does die in the next year. So we're going to go into his death now and kind of chat a little bit about how he came to that and some of the conspiracies around it.
Yay. Let's get to it.
Let's wrap up with the ooey gooey.
So basically, his death was not quite the great warrior battlefield death that you would have come to expect from him.
That's what happens when you behave like a child.
Yeah. So he actually was, it happened on his wedding night. He married another woman named Ildiko. And
that horny little honey.
Yep, she was young, beautiful. Again, one of several wives that he had.
Clearly into the lots of wives thing.
Yep, yep. All and so they got married in 453. And he, during this time, was preparing for another attack on the Eastern Roman Empire and its new emperor, Marcian.
Marcian.
I like Martian.
Martian does sound fun. Mars.
He should have the sword of Mars.
Attila the Hun, Princess of Mars.
He came for the sword. He's the rightful Martian.
Yep. So anyways, during this wedding ceremony, the wedding goes off without a hitch. They're having the big feast at the end. Now, I would like to remind you, he was not one to overindulge. Like I said, he lived a really simple life, really humble. But at this particular wedding, one of his many, he decided to feast and drink and just really take advantage of everything that was there. The next morning, he doesn't show up. You know, all of his guards and soldiers are wondering where he is, and he hasn't come out of his bridal chamber. So they take it upon themselves to go break in. They break down the doors to his bridal chamber and find his new wife crying hysterically over his dead body that is covered in blood.
Bro, that's sus.
And yeah, so that's what they do.
Very sus.
I will tell you, upon examining the body, they could not find any wounds. The only thing they could find was a lot of blood coming out from his nose.
So she's not the imposter. So, she's
not the imposter. He had a lot of nose candy that night, huh?
So they found him. No wound could be found. And they end up thinking that he has just died of a massive nosebleed. And because he was laying on his back. God,
dude. Like an anime nosebleed.
Like an anime nosebleed in real life.
All, dude. He,
he invented the anime nosebleed too.
Yeah. And they think that because he was laying on his back, rather than actually bleeding out his nose fully like it should, he actually choked on his own blood. But because he was so inebriated, he couldn't wake up and
he drowned himself.
He drowned himself in his blood.
So like,
he ain't nobody killing Attila except Attila.
Did the dude know how he got the nosebleed? Like, what, so there was it because of the weather?
So there's a couple different suggestions on how this happened.
She sat on his face.
So
the cartel already existed.
Some people actually do think that Ildiko did play a part in his death. But the only ones that they could really find were either she poisoned him because of Marcian, mm-hmm. The emperor. And then the murder was covered up by the guards. But again, they couldn't find any wounds. They didn't really see that as a big
reason. I mean,
if he would have passed out and punched him in the face and gave him a bloody nose.
Yeah, but they would have had a wound. But yeah, in the movies, when you drink poison, you like, and it comes out your nose. Yeah.
So there's not much credence to that. Not a lot of the historians.
Old a big old Joffrey Baratheon.
Yeah. A big old Joffrey.
Yep. So
when you said he ate a lot, I thought he was going to go the way of Elvis.
But yeah, so some people think that it was murder, assassination, but there's really not a whole lot to it. Some people just said it was a freak accident. He got drunk, fell asleep, and started bleeding.
Had he ever gotten nosebleeds before? So, I feel like that doesn't...
I will actually tell you. So there is a medical reason. So a lot of people said it's a cautionary tale for the dangers of binge drinking. Because they did say that he was a heavy drinker. He did drink a lot, not uh-huh. necessarily in excess at feasts like this, but he was a pretty consistent drinker.
I mean, it was a good day. He got married for like the thousandth time. He's got married thousandth time.
So they think, though, there's a thing called an esophageal hemorrhage, which is basically a burst blood vessel in your esophagus. That's due to long decades of a lot of alcohol. So they do think that could have potentially been it could have been internal bleeding due to the ruptured esophagus. But basically they're like veins in your esophagus that just are really fragile and they can rupture. So nowadays they think that is probably what killed him.
So basically what I'm getting is Martian came for the sword of Mars. He knew about this blood vessel thing in his nose,
mm-hmm.
so he sent Ildiko, whatever, to go and sit on his face at the right spot to cause him to die.
And they all show up, and he's just looking like a pastor in a Scarface.
I don't want to get too gross, but if she sat on his face, you know.
Well,
all I know is I'm never drinking again.
It is still a mystery, but one of the really cool parts of this, not the death, is actually how they buried him. And what happened after he died. So when all the guards and everyone found him, they actually started pulling the hair out of their heads and making really deep gouges and wounds in their bodies and face. And the reason they did this is because they felt that the greatest of all warriors needs to be mourned with not tears or crying like women do, but with the blood of men. So they were like, you know what? Crying's not enough. I'm going to bleed my tears onto you. So
you guys just move them up with the blood and slide them right into the grave.
You guys remember when our leader was going to lose to battle and he was going to burn himself? I feel like we need to do something like that to honor him. Yeah. Hey, whoa, Jerry, let's just make deep wounds on our face and pull out our hair. I don't want to die today.
Yep.
Cults are fucking weird.
Yeah, once they did all of that and they fully emoted all their sadness through.
This is why they needed emoji.
Yeah. They I found a couple things. They either the tent that he died in, they left him in there, or they placed him in a silk tent, and then they found their best horsemen and rode in circles around the tent as they cried and talked about how wonderful he was and all that. So, yeah, basically.
Dude, if my funeral is not this lit, like you guys,
bro, if you guys don't pull out your hair and gouge yourselves and then hide your cries in a tent while people ride around causing a dust storm, I'm gonna haunt the shit out of you.
Well, and not only that, once they were riding around in circles, they had a big party.
Naturally.
Yep, they had a big feast with grief, you know, counseling, I'm sure.
But feasting, don't drink too much. You'll get a nosebleed.
And they were all crying even more because of the pain that they inflicted on themselves.
Yeah. So they basically celebrated his life and rode around in circles and all that good stuff. But while that was happening, there was one article I found that said the new emperor of the East, Marcian, he actually got a vision. He had a dream and a vision of one of the gods coming to him in a dream, showing him the broken bow of Attila to basically say that, yeah, he died. So there's people that now believe that maybe there was some kind of
mythological interference. It was Mars taking the sword away from Attila and now giving it to Martian.
Yeah, and they...
He didn't like that he was crying about losing the battle.
Yeah, that's where it all went wrong when he threw that tantrum.
Yep. But yeah, he was thought to be even greater that the gods announced his death in that way. They, you know, had more respect for him, I guess, when he died that
Martian way. Martian was like, wow, maybe I shouldn't have killed the guy.
Yep. So finally, after all of that, this is super cool.
Yeah,
but
this was cool.
They buried him in three different coffins. The first one, the one that he was actually in, was made of gold. The next one outside of that was made of silver. And those were to represent all of the, basically the pillages and all the, you know, glories of war that he got during his reign.
Where do you guys think Yu-Gi-Oh got Exodia from?
See, that's what I was thinking when you said three coffins. I was like, it's going to be like one for his head, one for his torso, one for his legs.
Layers. Kind of like a Russian nesting doll situation.
Yeah. Okay, never mind. Yep. Forget the whole Exodia thing. Sorry, Yu-Gi-Oh.
And then the outer one was made of iron, and that was thought to symbolize all of the battles, the gray iron that showed his victories in war. And then rather than burying him just in the ground somewhere or in a tomb or any of that, in his coffins, they added in weapons of people he beat in battle. They added in rare furs, gems, ornaments, pretty much all the things that he didn't even want when he was alive, they put in his coffin. And
yeah. Bastard, we're giving it to you anyway.
We're giving it to you anyways, bud.
And then they
finally have somewhere to pack this shit.
I've been waiting to get rid of this for so long.
Yep. And then what they did is they actually, and this is the King of Gilgamesh is, I think, the other one that they found that did this as well. But it's written that they diverted a river in Hungary, actually completely diverted the route of a river, buried him in the soil of that river, covered it back up, and then re-diverted the river back on top of it. So he's actually buried underneath a body of water.
That's pretty cool.
So they don't actually know where he's buried. Archaeologists have been looking for it for years and nobody has ever found it. There was one group that thought they found it, but it turned out to be a hoax.
What about the people that buried it?
Yeah. So the other thing is to keep his burial place a secret, I found two things. It was either his servants or his best warriors, whoever it was that buried him, actually were killed directly after to keep his burial place a secret.
Damn.
Naturally.
So
What an honor it was to bury that man.
Well, and it was either his servants that did that, or it was his best warriors that were like, you know, we owe it to him or whatever, and they killed themselves.
They didn't need
it. I would be pissed if I was like the general in the army and they're like, okay, we're sending this dude down the river, and then the two best warriors get back and they're like, okay, you gotta kill him.
Yeah, we shouldn't have had you guys do it now that I'm looking at it.
Yeah, it was funeral honors of the great warrior. So yeah. Yep. So they were killed, and nobody knows where he's buried, but they think that it's potentially in Budapest, Hungary. But no idea if that's actually true or not. So that's where he ended up. And after all of that, after he's buried under a river somewhere and he's passed away, part of his prophecy came true, that his kingdom did collapse, but unfortunately his youngest son did not redeem it. The kingdom was
tradition.
The sons fought over the empire, tried to break it up into three pieces.
You asshole, Ethan.
And ended up causing the entire empire that he had built over his reign and the reign of his forefathers. In 16 years, the empire was completely gone.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Yeah, that just got absolutely decimated.
Yeah,
then.
Yep. But the cool thing is, after, you know, 1,500 years, his name's still out there. He's still seen as a badass. A lot of people, you know, still say that he's the greatest warrior of all time.
The greatest.
He died from a nosebleed. I could kick his ass.
Yeah. So
I know his weak spot now.
Yeah, yeah, that is the...
people were smaller back then, too. We probably could.
Yep. So. But that is the life and sad death of Attila the Hun.
I enjoyed that.
That was, yeah, that was awesome.
Any closing statements or suggestions or anything that you want to throw out about Mr. Attila the Hun, ATH?
I really got to work on my eye rolls if that's what was intimidating back then.
Right?
I just think there's no way that it was like great warriors that buried him. He had to have in his will that it was like the two shittiest warriors, like, I want them to let me down one final time.
One final time, let me down into the ground. I knew it was your
fault. You guys are the reason I destroyed my tower of Legos and had to retreat. You're buried.
Well, since you did all the research and whatnot, what is the moral of the story that you got from ATH?
Well, I think ultimately he lived a life of simplicity as far as like his own like close to the chest stuff, and he died in a really simple way. So I think that's a little bit poetic in that, yeah, he was, you know, humble and modest when it came to his personal. He was a badass
Did he have a smile on his face when they found his body? Like, was he enjoying something?
Probably covered in blood, so I'm sure they weren't looking
couldn't
at
see
it.
You can see a smile through blood. All I'm saying,
he just had one of those signs that just said "Live, Love, Laugh" on the side of his bed.
The moral of the story is, but you can only have so many wives before you can't trust one. Right? Is that? Did I get it?
Sure.
And if he had gotten his dinosaur before death, he wouldn't have died.
Yeah.
All I'm going to say is that at least he lived a long life with all the wives that he had. Some people get one and they're just dead.
Yeah.
So at least he got to have them.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah,
he was playing wife roulette.
He seemed successful. Yeah, he died a successful Hun.
Yes.
Who did what he wanted to do in life. You know, yeah. He may or may not have got help from Mars. But if
we're
he did,
probably lucky,
you know,
that he didn't live longer than that.
Yeah, well, that's probably why the sword probably that it could have just been the sword, man. The sword takes a toll on you, and after you use it for so long, it fucks you up. And he got that crazy ass nosebleed, and you know, he was like, "This is my time." And it said to this
don't
day,
drink too much.
It's not. It said to this day that that man had the biggest smile on his face when he was dead.
We'll go with that.
I'm pretty sure that's not true. Don't quote me on that. If you quote anybody, it was Jordan.
I did not source that.
Well, thanks for listening to The Death Address. Follow our social media pages on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram for exclusive information on what's to come and to ask us questions. Take a look at our website at www.deathshifter.com. You can find all of the links there as well as some information about the Death Shifter team. If you're interested in supporting the show, check out our Patreon at patreon.com/deathshifter. We'll see you all next time. Till then, take care of yourselves and
don't forget to tip your death guides. Time to learn, time to laugh. It's the Death Address.